Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I would ride my bike and, go alongside when if she was jogging. And she had gotten a Pavarotti tape that she liked to play in a little CD player as we went along in the evenings. When she found Ireland, her whole life really changed. You know, one of the priests at Maynooth said she could lift the spirits of the whole class, that she was that happy to be there. It's a terrible loss.
Hello, and welcome to episode 22 of The Vanished. Tonight I will be covering Ireland's Vanishing Triangle. It is the story of eight women who disappeared from the east coast of Ireland in the 1990s. I will be splitting this into two parts because there is a lot of information to share. 26-year-old Annie McCarrick was the first woman to go missing. She disappeared on March 26, 1993. Annie had been sharing an apartment with two other roommates in Dublin, Ireland. She ran errands that day, including going to the grocery store and to the bank. She left later that day to go walking in Enniskerry, which is about a half hour away from her home. She was supposed to pick up her paycheck that day, but never showed up. There was a possible sighting of Annie on the number 44 bus headed to Enniskerry around 3:30 p.m. that day. Around 9 p.m., there was another possible sighting of her at Johnny Fox's pub in Glen Cullen. Witnesses saw a woman matching her description there with a man that night. It is important to note that Annie did not have a boyfriend at the time. Annie had plans to have a dinner party at her place the next day. Her friends went to her apartment, but Annie was not there. Her roommates called her father John in New York, and he knew something was wrong immediately because it was out of character for Annie to not keep in touch. Her mother had planned to visit Annie in Ireland from the United States in a couple of days, and Annie was looking forward to seeing her mother. Annie's parents immediately left for Ireland to help search for Annie, but she has never been found. In 2014, a book called Missing Presumed was released. It told the story of a man who was a member of the IRA in 1993. The book claims that a reliable source had come forward and said that this man was part of the IRA unit that was responsible for shootings and beatings in West Belfast at the time. He went to Johnny Fox's pub that night and met Annie. He started bragging to her about the things that he was involved in, and then realized that he had said too much. He offered to give her a ride into town, but instead took her into the mountains where he killed her and hid her body in some bushes. He then went back home and told other IRA members what he had done and that he thought she was a spy. The next day, two cards went out. One was to hide the body and the other was to handle the authorities. Her body was then supposedly hidden somewhere in the mountains. That same year, this man moved to the United States after he supposedly raped another IRA member's daughter. He allegedly had a history of sexually abusing children. The man told one source that he gave Annie a ride from the pub to a bus station in Bray and that he never saw her again. This man has never been tracked down and questioned by authorities.
It's been a long time, such a very long time. We're pretty sure, that we'll never see her again. But I guess my greatest wish would be to be able to take her home. Have a grave that I could go to. So, to find out, what happened to her really would be a great gift at this point. Really would.
The next woman to go missing was 39-year-old Ava Brennan, who disappeared from the Terenure area on July 25th, 1993. She had left her parents' house to go home to her own apartment after a Sunday afternoon family gathering. The last sighting of Ava was in Rathdown Park. Ava was known to be close to her family, and it would be out of character for her to just leave on her own. Her family believes that she did, in fact, make it home that day, because the jacket that she was wearing when she left the family gathering was found in her apartment. No trace of Ava has ever been found. On January 3, 1994, 22-year-old Imelda Keenan disappeared. Imelda was last seen on the day of her disappearance at her residence on William Street in Waterford by her boyfriend Mark. She told Mark that she was going to the post office. She left their flat at 1:30 p.m. and walked down William Street onto Lombard Street. The last definite sighting of her was when she was seen crossing the road by a local doctor's secretary who knew Imelda well. This friend observed her crossing the road at the corner of Tower Hotel and Lombard Street. No trace of Imelda has ever been found.
Waterford City Centre, 1994. The last time Imelda Keenan was seen was on Lombard Street, close to her William Street flat. Originally from Laois, Imelda was doing an ANCO or FOSS course in the city. Her family gathered at the cemetery at her hometown of Mount Mellick today. Describing her as a shy girl, they still can't believe nobody has ever come forward with any information, and that not one sign of Imelda was ever made after her disappearance.
We were told that Imelda went to the GPO that day to get her social welfare payment, but it was a bank holiday Monday and that was closed. And that's all we were told, that she went out at around 3 o'clock and never came back. You know, and there's been no sightings of her since.
The pain is still very strong.
Yeah, Grant, on my knees, I beg you. Just give us our sister.
Our interest in this campaign from the 3rd of January 94 to date is to find our sister. No other issue or no other agenda is being pursued by the Keenan family. And we would encourage that if we found Imelda, that the case would close.
The file on Imelda Keenan's disappearance remains open at Waterford Garda Station.
21-year-old Jojo Dollard went missing on November 9, 1995. She had met friends in Dublin that evening and was planning to take a bus back home to Kilkenny, where she lived with her sister. She ended up missing that bus and decided to hitchhike back instead. She got a ride from someone who dropped her off in the town of Moon, which is about halfway home. She called a friend to let them know what was going on, and she said that she had to go because a car was coming. She was last seen leaning into the back seat of a dark-colored Toyota Carina. A girl fitting her description was seen in Castle Dermot a short time later. About an hour after that, in Dunkit, Kilmacow, a witness saw a young girl being put into the back of a car by two unidentified men. The young girl was barefoot. Jojo's sister, Mary, has publicly stated that she knows who killed her sister. She said that she received an anonymous letter from the ex-girlfriend of a man that claimed he was responsible. She handed that letter over to authorities, and she feels that they have done nothing with that information. Joe Blake, who was part of Trace Missing Persons, asked the public for help solving Jojo's case in 2015. He said that a tip came in through their website from a woman in Australia who was from the Midlands region of Ireland. She said that a guy picked her up about 20 years earlier, and she had a feeling that he knew something about the missing women. Joe Blake has asked anyone who would have been hitchhiking and got a ride from someone who drove a van or a truck and spoke with a Midlands accent in the 1990s to please contact him via email at traceireland@gmail.com. There is a man that is considered the main suspect in Jojo's case. His name's Larry Murphy, and I'm going to discuss him at the end. But the man that Joe Blake is looking for does not match Larry Murphy's description.
The last reported contact of 21-year-old Josephine Dollard was when it's claimed she called a friend, Mary Cullinan, at around 11:15 p.m. on Thursday last from the Kildare village of Moon. She was having problems hitching a lift, but said she would call when she arrived home. She lived here in a flat in the Kilkenny village of Callan.
Well, we are naturally very concerned. She is 21 years of age, but she did leave home on Thursday morning and didn't indicate to anybody that she didn't intend returning home that day, and the expectation was that she would. She was in Dublin on Thursday. We're satisfied that she was in Dublin from our inquiries so far. We don't know who she met there, and we'd like to information on that, as I said. The next that was heard from her was on Thursday night, when she rang her friend, and she said she was in the village of Moon. She hasn't been seen or heard of since, and we're very anxious to hear from anybody in Moon who may have seen her there.
This evening, as the Garda investigation continues, Josephine's sister, Mary, made this appeal.
I would like to say to Giorgio, I call her Giorgio, we know her as Giorgio, if she's out there, please phone us. We are worried. And please, you know, we miss you. And we will give you a big hug, but please, if you're at all, please do.
Not even a year later, 25-year-old Fiona Pender disappeared on August 22, 1996. She was 7 months pregnant at the time and very excited to become a mother. Fiona was a model and a hairdresser. She had spent the day with her mother shopping for things for the baby. Fiona was last seen alive when she was dropped off around 7 p.m. at the home that she shared with her then-boyfriend, John Thompson, in Tullamore. Her missing date is listed as the 23rd in some places because John says he saw her on the morning of the 23rd before he left for work, but he has also been the prime suspect in the case. The following day, her mother, Josephine, was unable to get an answer when she knocked on the door, and the next day she alerted authorities. John said that on the night in question, he stayed at his family's farm outside of Tullamore and had no idea how or why Fiona disappeared. This contradicts other statements that he saw her in the morning before he left for work. One motorist came forward and gave a statement saying that he was almost forced off the road south of Tullamore in the direction of Slieve Bloom by a four-wheel drive vehicle on the night Fiona was last seen by her mother. It took 5 days for authorities to issue a national request for information about her disappearance. After a broadcast about Fiona aired on television, a local man came forward and said that he had seen two men carrying something that looked like a rolled-up carpet from the building on Church Street where Fiona had been living. He said they placed the bulky object in the rear of a four-wheel drive vehicle. In the following weeks and months, searches took place across boglands, woods, and rivers. 4 miles of the Royal Canal was drained, but nothing was ever found. In April 1997, authorities arrested and questioned two men and three women in relation to her disappearance, but they all denied having any knowledge of Fiona's whereabouts. In 2008, a small wooden cross bearing the name Fiona Pender was found in the Slieve Bloom Mountains. The cross was made of planks of wood hammered together. It said, Fiona Pender, buried here, August 22, 1996. Now, if you remember, that's the day that her mother dropped her off, not the day her boyfriend said he saw her in the morning. The wood was described as fresh, so it is believed that it was only out there for a short time. Authorities think that it's possible it was only out there for weeks before someone walking through the area found it. The area where the cross was found was searched, but nothing was recovered. Many believe that it was a cruel hoax, but authorities believe that the cross was significant enough to warrant a second, more extensive search. They returned to search a 2-acre site. They brought in British forensic search expert Mark Harrison, who is a veteran of searches for concealed bodies. Portuguese police even called him in to search for Madeline McCann. Harrison came up with a detailed search plan, but nothing was found. Many believe that the makeshift cross was stuck in the ground by someone who knows what happened to Fiona. Fiona's mother said, "Well, I think the chief suspect could have been responsible for putting the cross there. Oh, definitely, it was not a hoax." No further progress was made until John Thompson was arrested in Canada. He was arrested on multiple charges related to sexually assaulting and threatening his wife. He was eventually cleared of these charges, but the allegations were that he would drug his wife, then put makeup on her and videotape himself sexually assaulting her. The evidence from the case in Canada appears to suggest that he derived sexual pleasure from necrophilia fantasies. Some of the videotapes were played at his trial, and they show his wife unconscious and wearing dark garish makeup, which sometimes included blue eyeshadow, fake eyelashes, also sometimes a blonde wig and long fake nails. His wife testified that she never wore that makeup, nor did she have any memory of putting it on. She had found one of her husband's bags filled with strange makeup and fake nails hidden under a mattress in a spare bedroom in their home. When she confronted him about it, he allegedly told her that it was none of her business and she should be grateful that he was interested in his wife instead of other women. I do not want to get too far off track by including too much about that case from Canada, but in her testimony, she mentioned times that he had threatened her which relate to Fiona's disappearance. She said that during at least four arguments, he said if she kept pushing him, she would end up like his ex-girlfriend. He said things like, "You know, I've done it before. They'll never find you. Is that what you want?" Canadian authorities reached out to inform the authorities in Ireland about these statements. His wife also mentioned a time when they were still living in Ireland and he took her to a place and told her that Fiona was buried there. They sent photographs to see if she recognized any places, but it was not an easy task for her because some of the landscape had changed over all those years. Using the information they got from her, a search began in 2014 for Fiona's remains. Authorities believed that he wanted his wife to know or fear that he had killed and buried Fiona, but that the location did not match with earlier information, which indicates to them that Fiona was taken to another location in Slieve Bloom and buried there, possibly with the assistance of one or two other men related to the prime suspect. Authorities and Fiona's family have never wavered from the belief that she was killed by someone that she knew and that others in the community helped conceal her fate. Her mother said that she confronted the man she suspected of killing her daughter, and I quote, "He was like a block of ice. The answer no kept coming. He was a block of ice."
This is part of an ongoing investigation into the disappearance of Fiona Pender in 1996. She's been missing now for some 18 years, and there has been ongoing investigations into that disappearance since her disappearance. The family of Fiona are still anxious to recover her back to their family so that they can, at this stage, perhaps we have to accept, give her a Christian burial. Unfortunately, despite significant efforts and large-scale investigations down the years, we have not been successful to date in recovering Fiona. However, following on recent investigations and from intelligence we've gleaned from our inquiries, we are about to commence a search today in the Kappa area of Rosanalis, a wooded area there. This will be a forensic search, going from a least intrusive to an intrusive forensic search. We will be employing the services of our own specially trained people who are trained in searching for cold case persons who have been missing for substantial periods of time. We are also engaging forensic archaeologists, cadaver dogs, and others to search this specific area of approximately 200 square metres. Well, as I said, it's part of the ongoing investigation. It's an intelligence-led search. So, I mean, I don't wish to develop any further as to why we're going there, but there is a reason for going there. We didn't pick it off the map, essentially. We have our inquiries are both international and local, and I don't wish to confirm any source of information. You can appreciate there are sensitivities as to where the Gardaí get information. And on that front, I would say to anybody, this is 18 years ago. There are people who may have been under pressure back then not to talk or not to tell a story. And I would strongly appeal to anybody who knows anything to now come forward and tell us anything they may know about this. So at this stage, we must fear the worst. And we have to accept them. The Garda Síochána, for those who may not be aware, we arrested five people on suspicion of the murder of Fiona Pender in the past. There was five people arrested in connection with this inquiry. So this inquiry, for a substantial period of time, has taken the view that Fiona was murdered.
On February 13th, 1997, 17-year-old Kira Breen stayed up watching TV with her mom until about 12:25 a.m. when they both went to bed. Her mom went to check on her around 1:50 a.m. and found that she was not home. Her bedroom window was not locked, and her mother believes that she went out the front door and left her bedroom window unlocked to sneak back in later. It is believed that she left home for a prearranged meeting with a much older man. The man in question was known to hang around Kira's group of friends at a local chip shop. Kira's mom knows the identity of this man and has said that he had tried to talk to Kira at their home before and she had to chase him off. A man was arrested and released in 1999, and in April of 2015, the same man, now in his 50s, was again arrested and released. The 1999 arrest came after a young man came forward and told authorities that he had been at a pub with this man when a story about Kira's disappearance came on. The man made a comment along the lines of, "Kira won't be coming back." As the years have gone by, more of her friends have been willing to give information to the police. They have said that they were there when she made a date to meet him later that night. Authorities believe that a number of people have vital information about Kira's disappearance. In 2015, a tip led authorities to search Balmer's Bog. The bog covers about 16 acres. I was looking at pictures of the search online, and it looks like a very, very difficult place to search. The tip that they received told them to search Balmer's Bog and that they'd find what they were looking for. One significant item that she was wearing that police have always searched for is a limited edition Mickey Mouse Disney watch. It has a square face and showed Mickey Mouse catching a ball. It was bought for her in Florida, and authorities believe that it's probably the only one of its type in Ireland.
I had one, just one little girl. My heart, my soul, my world. And just like that, she was gone. She was not street smart. She paid the price. And if anything comes out of this, I would like it to be yes for whoever has the information we need for Kira to give it. Please, please, don't let her lie out there on her own anymore. Let her come home.
How did that appeal lead to this search, which started yesterday?
I think we can't underestimate the importance of that appeal on Crime Call last year, Gavin. Essentially, after that appeal was aired on RTE, several people came forward. We know that there was at least one anonymous letter written to the Gardaí in the Dundalk investigating Kira's disappearance, but we also know that several women who were young girls, I suppose, around the time of Kira's disappearance came forward as well, and all the information led to this point at Balmer's Bog. So the Gardaí are treating this information as very seriously, but they're also treating it as something that is very, very credible. So there is, I suppose, a level of significant optimism, cautious optimism, about this latest tip-off in relation to Kira.
Why did Bernadette make that appeal at that time?
Well, there was a cold case investigation into Kira's disappearance. We know that in 1999, a man was arrested, but with many of the Operation Trace, which is the investigation into the six or seven missing women from the Leinster area, nothing really had happened. The investigation, I suppose, had ground into the ground. So Mrs. Breen made this appeal again, and there's no doubt that it did bear significant fruit, and people did hear and heed what she said and have come forward.
Have there been searches before?
Yes, there have been regular searches. Gardaí never closed their inquiry, and although it has been moved over to the cold case unit, that is merely for review. So the Gardaí in Dundalk, Gerry Turley is the superintendent there, he gave a brief briefing yesterday. They have been constantly searching, they have been constantly looking for information. But I think, Gavin, this shows that people do have information about crimes. Crimes do not take place in a vacuum, and it's always about hammering home the information that people they request, and the point that people need to come forward with the information. People have had information about this crime and about this disappearance for almost 20 years. They were, in that case, they were young girls, effectively children at that time, and perhaps they didn't realise the importance of what they had, but they mature and they get older. Things are at the back of their head, and they come forward, and they have come to the forward front of their head, and they have come forward now.
Our colleague Samantha Librari, who was there yesterday, describes this as a very boggy area. There is a lot of deep water, a lot of wild scrubland. It's a 16-acre site. Is this very different to where it was searched before, and how difficult an operation is it going to be to search this site?
Yes, there's no doubt it is going to be a difficult operation. I was up there yesterday, and Samantha is right, it's very marshy. If you look at any of the pictures, you can see that there are Gardaí literally up to their necks in water. So it's going to be difficult in that sense, because you're not only searching for any remains or any pieces of evidence that may be buried in the land, but also in water. So that obviously does make it difficult. Other areas have been searched before, but they would have been pieces of scrubland and that sort of thing. So there's no doubt that that does make it difficult. But I do have to say, you could see yesterday that Gardaí were, although it is a 16-acre area, they were looking at quite specific and discrete areas. So the Gardaí are obviously looking at specific areas on the basis of specific intelligence. So there would be, as I say, an air of cautious optimism about this search.
So Gardaí believe that however long it takes, they believe they will find something here, yes?
Yeah, interestingly, speaking to senior officers yesterday, you could see that they were personally and professionally invested in this, and they were saying that they were determined to bring Ciara home and to find her, and so they obviously aren't going to give up until they bring Ciara home for her mother, Bernadette.
Unfortunately, the search of Balmer's Bog did not find any trace of Ciara.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you, and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
19-year-old Fiona Sinnott disappeared on February 8, 1998. That evening, she was at Butler's Pub with friends. Her ex-partner and the father of her 11-month-old daughter, Sean Carroll, joined her that evening. Even though they had broken up months earlier, they still remained friendly. Throughout the night, Fiona complained about pain in her chest and arm. When Fiona went to leave, a friend asked Sean to walk with her because of the pain she was experiencing. She was reported missing by her father 10 days later. One of the first people to be interviewed was Sean Carroll. He told authorities that he had walked Fiona back to her house in Ballyhit and that he had spent the night sleeping on the couch. Fiona had gone straight to bed because of the pains that she was experiencing. The next morning, Sean said that he walked into Fiona's bedroom and saw that she was awake. According to Sean, Fiona had told him that she was still in pain and that she planned on hitchhiking to her doctor's office later that day. Fiona said that she had no money, so he gave her some. He then left the house and got a ride from his mother, who was waiting in a car outside. Sean and his mother then drove back to their home, which was where Fiona's daughter Emma had been staying at the time. No evidence has been found that would suggest that Fiona was seen by a doctor that day, nor was she seen hitchhiking. One of the most bizarre things about Fiona's disappearance is that when her home was searched, it appeared that her house had been stripped bare of all of her personal belongings. One detective stated that there was a complete absence of clothing and other personal items, indicating that Fiona and her daughter were actually living there. Neighbors reported that they had seen several black trash bags outside of the property. A local farmer came forward and told authorities that he had discovered several black bags in the corner of one of his fields. They contained items and documents that had Fiona's name written on them. Unfortunately, the farmer had set fire to these bags because he initially thought that someone just dumped their trash there illegally. It wasn't until he heard about Fiona's disappearance that he realized how significant they were. Remember, there was a 10-day period that she was missing and it had not been reported. Investigators began to suspect that somebody was trying to mislead them into thinking that Fiona had run away. A tip came in saying that a woman was heard screaming in the Mill Pond Cross area on the night that Fiona had left Butler's Pub. Another person who had been driving through the area at the time said that they witnessed a couple who appeared to be arguing with one another. Investigators believe that there are a number of people in the Wexford area who know what happened to Fiona. There have also been persistent rumors that several locals were actively involved in the cover-up of her murder and that people are afraid of the suspect. In 2001, a man that was suspected of having been involved in the disposal of Fiona's body died from a drug overdose. Supposedly, the man in question had been finding it difficult to live with the guilt of having been involved. He would not tell authorities the location of her remains because only three people knew about the exact location. On September 16, 2005, the authorities announced that they were now treating the case as a full murder investigation. A few hours before the announcement was made, three women and three men were arrested and questioned in connection with her disappearance, but were released without being charged. One important piece of information was that she had been abused by a boyfriend in the past. It is unclear which boyfriend. She had been to the hospital several times with injuries, but would not say what happened to her. One assault that she told friends about was so brutal that the person could have been jailed for a very long time, but without Fiona, they cannot charge the man. Authorities believe that she was either murdered or died accidentally, and someone panicked and covered it up. In 2015, Fiona's family began their own private dig. They had gotten a tip through Facebook 2 years prior and became frustrated when authorities did not act on it.
She was really bubbly, real kind-hearted and all, and, you know, real outgoing and all. And, you know, she's a typical 19-year-old girl. It's always hope, but it's, you know, everything that goes on and all, there's hope, like, that we would find her and bring her home and all. And, you know, it's been hard as well. 17 years is a long time.
Because 1998 was before the proliferation of mobile phone technology, Fiona would only be in touch with her family every 6 or 7 days. And because of this, it would be a full 10 days before she was reported missing on February 18th, 1998. Fiona had lots of things to look forward to in life now, like her beloved daughter Emma's first birthday on February 28th, and the 21st birthday of her sister Diane on February 27th, whom she was extremely close to. She missed both occasions, and at this point her family feared for the worst. They believe that something awful happened to her and that Fiona did not decide to vanish of her own accord.
It's a very, very tough situation. Like, we want to believe that she's out there somewhere, but there's absolutely, like, the reason why we believe she's gone is that there's absolutely no way that that girl would have left her baby behind, 11 months old, looking forward to her first birthday. Like I'm a mother myself, and, you know, first birthdays are a huge thing, and there's absolutely no way. Like, Emma was Fiona's shadow. Like, you'll never see a bigger smile on that girl's face as when that little girl was sitting on her hip when she was going out for walks and stuff. You know, she loved that child as more than anything. She would have laid down her life for that child. There's absolutely no way that she would have walked away from her. She was taken away. She didn't walk away.
Fiona's father, Pat, died of a broken heart in 2004 at 59 years of age. He waited at the gate every single evening since Fiona's disappearance in the hope that she would one day return home.
He was at the gate there every evening. They're just hoping that she'd come in every night. You know, he's killing him at the end of it. Like, he's just broken hearted. Like.
Fiona's family organised their own search of land earlier this year and say information has come to light about another site where they're hoping searches will be carried out.
Still living in hope, you know, that someone will pick up that phone, make that anonymous call, and just give information of her. Of her whereabouts, like, because we believe that she's still in Wexford somewhere. Like, Fiona is, she didn't go far that night, and she didn't just walk out.
A Garda spokesperson said the investigation into Fiona's disappearance was ongoing, and that any information Gardaí received would be actioned immediately. Gardaí have appealed for anyone with any information to contact them.
Unfortunately, no trace of Fiona has been found. 18-year-old Deirdre Jacob was studying to be a teacher at St. Mary's College in London. She was back home in Ireland for the summer, and on Tuesday, July 28, 1998, she left home around noon to walk to Newbridge to visit her grandmother. Around 2:10 p.m., she went to AIB Bank in Newbridge and then to the post office. She then returned back to see her grandmother before leaving to walk back home. It would have taken her about 25 minutes to walk to her house. She was last seen around 3:30 p.m. at the gateway to her house, but she never made it inside. She just simply vanished off the street in broad daylight. Two women who worked at a deli came forward and claimed that they had seen her come into the deli a couple days after she disappeared, but these sightings have never been confirmed.
Well, as you say, every anniversary is difficult. Every day is difficult. And I suppose 15 years seems a very long time, you know.
Not to you, though, I'm sure, and the family.
Well, in some ways, it's a very long time that we haven't seen Deirdre and she's missing. But at the same time, because it's with us all the time, it seems like as if it was yesterday in another way.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it is with you every day. Now, it is 15 years on, but you believe that there is still perhaps something out there that you don't know, that the Gardaí don't know, and that's why you're doing this renewed appeal today.
Yes, that's right. Well, you see, the passage of time, and people might feel differently now. They might have information that maybe they didn't want to talk about or they didn't want to disclose, or now they are, you know, older, feel different about things, and we're just hoping and looking for information. We need help. We really need help to progress the search for Deirdre further.
Bernadette, often as people discuss this and report on it, sometimes there's a connection made with the disappearance of other women around that time, and there's a belief in some quarters that they're perhaps linked. Do you place any kind of store in that theory?
Well, as far, the way we look at it is Deirdre is missing and we're looking for her, and any connection, we don't even consider that. We're looking for Deirdre and we're completely focused on that and what might have happened to her. We don't look at the other cases in relation to Deirdre.
Do you have any sort of theory yourself as to what might have happened, Bernadette?
No, we haven't. We are no wiser today than we were on the day she went missing, and we really don't know what happened to Deirdre. As far as we were concerned, Deirdre arrived at her gateway and we have absolutely no idea what happened to her after that, as if she just vanished at that point.
That brings us to the end of episode 22. Tomorrow I will be putting up part 2, where I will discuss the different suspects. There was a lot of information in this episode, and I wanted to give everybody a little bit of time to digest it, because there are several suspects that have lengthy criminal backgrounds of their own. If you would like to email me your thoughts, theories, or suggestions, my email is thevanishedpodcast@gmail.com. I am on Twitter @thevanishedpod. There is a Facebook page called The Vanished Podcast and a closed discussion group called The Vanished Podcast Discussion Group. It is closed to keep your comments private, but everyone is welcome to join. There is also a call-in line for the show. The phone number is 814-VANISH-9. You can call and leave a voicemail about your thoughts on the show or a specific case. Thanks everybody for listening, and keep an eye out tomorrow for part 2.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.